It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from the BEA Beautiful Studios of Freedoms, Phoenix. Freedoms with an S, phoenix.com in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's hot. Hot. But that means we get to wear sandals and shorts and polo shirts and walk around and be cool in more ways than one. Get to wear sunglasses. Yeah, future's so bright, I got to wear shades. Well, you know, the one thing that you just got to wonder about and worry about is sayonara. Blackwater puts itself up for sale. The security firm formerly known as Blackwater, which now called ZXE or something, I don't know why they renamed it. Blackwater is looking for new ownership, announcing Monday it is pursuing a sale of the company that became renowned and reviled for its involvement with the U.S. government in Iraq and elsewhere. Blah, 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 blah. Bottom line is this. They're going to sell this at Z Services now. They're going to sell it. The owner is Eric Prince, which is, a Republican right-wing Christian army of the Bush administration guy, is going to be selling it because they can. And I don't know, they'll probably make quite a bit of money. In March, a Senate Armed Services Committee, the chairman, Carl Levin, suggested that the Pentagon should ban them, Z, from a $1 billion deal to train Afghani police. Now, that was it. That's a ka-ching count there. We're going to have them train the Afghanis. Afghan police, they're going to get trained by somebody, military, police. No, we're going to do Blackwater or Z or whatever. So it's just so, and they got such a bad rep that I'm not sure they can be functional anywhere. Well, they just change the name, and you think anybody doesn't know with the internet. They know it's the same people. So they'll sell it. I'm sure he made his gazillion dollars. He's going to be okay. But this private security firm kind of thing, you think that's just going to go away? This whole mercenary idea? Heck no. It's going to resurrect itself somewhere else in some other form doing something. And the template that they created for this is going to, it's Katrina going around, turn in your guns, please. So I don't see this changing. I don't see that this mechanism of creating private armies to do the will of the overlords is going to go away. I'm glad to see that at least it's getting the attention. See, this is the point that I'm making. On Freedoms Phoenix, we have a lot of people put a lot of stuff up. And I get as many complaints. Well, I don't really. Not anymore. I used to get a lot of complaints from the left, the right, the libertarians. How dare you put this guy on? I can't believe you don't. And then when it gets in a nice little posting flame war about this Israel thing, you got just as many in support of them as against them going out. I just love it. Love it. Love it. Long time. Go. Duke it out. Have it out. And in amongst all the flack, there might be some truth in there. And at the same time, you have supporters of the people pro this guy and anti that guy. Both of all of their supporters, all of their readers, all of their people that are have the same view come to Freedom's Phoenix and get their cortex brushed with the libertarian perspective on everything. Freedom's the answer. What's the question?
God, no, I want to break free.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Hello. Welcome back here to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And we're what are we doing? Learning something, you know, contemplating. You know, today's a good time. You know, you guys want to call in, we'll yak about it. You know, I mean, I know I don't get you guys enough, but you're welcome to call in today. I don't have a guest, and I'm going to be talking about a bunch of stuff here, so we can just segue into whatever. 800-313-9443. Whatever you want to talk about, let me tell you what I want to talk about. And it'll change as soon as you call in. But I'm going to read this to you. This is New York Times, okay? This is about the Bigelow Aerospace, and the space stations are already in orbit. They're probably over 15,000 orbits now. It's been a year and a half, 2 years that this has been going on. And you hear all the stupid stuff about, I lost my wrench on the space station, but, you know, and our urinal water purification thing is leaking, but you don't hear about, oh, and over there, a little bright light, or the, it's a freaking, it's, that's not a moon, it's a space station, okay? That's, I mean, this is already going on. The Bigelow Aerospace is the guy, I don't know if it says in here, but he owns the Budget Suites chain of hotels, whatever. And I remember when they first did this, it was something like $60, $70 million. He goes, what would it take? I mean, come on. I mean, how hard is this? You know, what would it take? Well, you know, for X amount of dollars, we could develop and do and this and get and everything. And a Russian, you know, they got rockets sitting around, laying around somewhere. They're always launching something for money. We can go over there. We can do, what do they call it? I can't remember what the European space thing is called, but they got their own little thing. And then, of course, you know, the United States has nothing. I mean, you know, it's shuttle, and that's, you know, what a joke. So that created an enormous market for them to do. They just launched a few days ago Falcon 9 off out of Cape Canaveral. You know, there it went. 9 engines. And what I found out, Powell's telling us that senior editor Powell Gammel, he's been following this and putting the live broadcast web feeds of them going off, and we're getting in 10, 9, 8. You know, it's been really cool. We've been following this. And what they're doing, this cluster, it started off with Falcon 1. Falcon, original rocket, testing the engines and its ability to put something into orbit and so on, had one engine. Well, they go, you know what? Well, we can just put 9 of them together, get a big enough fuel tank, and you can lift up all kinds of stuff. You can go to the moon. Oh, want to go to Mars? Well, we can just take like you know, a whole bunch of these 9 thing clusters and put like 9 of the 9 or something around, and you got a whole bunch of it, and we can lift, you know, you give me a lever big enough, I'll move the Earth, okay? Give me enough rocket engines and I can, you know, change orbit. I mean, you know, whatever. So that's what they did. You know, they got a Falcon 9 up, and now we can do whatever we want civilian. That's why Obama is cutting way back on NASA and everything, because they're just blah, blah, blah. They're wasteful. It's bloated, you know, nothing. They're not even able to keep up. So they're just starting to buy contracts, you know, contracting with these private space companies to put up all their uber-secret DARPA satellite stuff. I'm not feeling any better about that. Now then the government becomes their biggest, you know, customer, yay. And that comes with strings, I guarantee it. But there is a thing. I need to explain something to you. Maybe I'll go find it and put it up on today's archive. You know, that'd be a good idea. Lagrange. I got to, you know, give you my limited understanding of what that means. Lagrange points are zero energy to keep position between the Earth and the moon. I'll give you an example. You hear about geopositioning satellite orbit, blah, blah, blah. About 26,000 miles up, you have, if you put a satellite up, it'll stay in that spot and rotate at the same speed as the Earth so that that one satellite is always over the same position on the Earth. So you have these satellites that are geopositional, and that, I think the biggest reason they used those was for television communications back in the day. And I'm sure they got a lot of other uses. But the point is that if you get it, there's a certain distance from the Earth, and I think it's about 25, 28,000 miles, something like that. Doesn't matter. Long ways. Not really that far, because it's only, what is it, 250, 60, 70,000 miles to the moon. So you have probably, you know, 10% of the distance between the Earth and the moon. You can put a satellite there, and it just rotates at the same speed as the Earth around the equator, and it just on that axis, you know, and it's always over the same position. Also makes for a really nice picture taken, you know. Well, I have some lower orbit, I'm sure. Now, Lagrange points in space. Now, Lagrange is kind of a little bit different. Let me pull something out here. We'll do a Wikipedia. I think probably do me up pretty good. Lagrange is a where if you get a certain distance between the Earth and the moon, you'll find that there is a gravity pull that's equal to both sides. Now, there's also some, you know, some are small points, some are big points. There's Lagrange 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Lagrange 1 is directly between Earth and the moon. Now, of course, it's going to be a lot closer to the moon or between the sun and the Earth. It'd be, you know, a lot closer to the Earth than the sun. It's depending on which has a bigger pull. So you have the big one that you want to get, I guess probably the one that would be the most advantageous would be Lagrange 1, which is the one that would be between the Earth and the moon. If you had a space station there, then you would – it'd be like the top of the hill. You know, you take all this energy, you're hiking, you get, you know, to the ridge line, and then on the other side is the other town and the ski lodge, the hotel, the hunting lodge, or whatever is over down there, and it's pretty close right down the bottom. You go over there, and oh, that's cool. You know, I got a break point. I can sit up here getting down to the base, or heck, I can ride the zip line or just, you know, slide on my butt or water slide or whatever. I go down there, I'm good. On the other side, probably, you know, further away is Earth, you know, is your base age, where you left home before you went. You're walking this long trail, you get up, and, you know, it's hard, you wait here. Now, what happens if you have a space station, a station right at the top of that ridge? Either way, it's almost no energy to go either way. Once you made it there, it's all downhill from there. Now, of course, you got that reentry thing going on, but I mean, you know, you can see what I mean. You don't need a whole lot of rocket fuel to make it. You already did it. You're at the top of the hill. So on one side, the gravity will pull to the moon. One side, the gravity will pull to Earth. So making it there, you know, it's a popular point to be because it doesn't matter either way you go. You're going to, you know, not have to use a lot of fuel to get to Earth. You're going to get to the moon in case you need supplies, in case there's an emergency, in case you just want to sit there and, you know, whatever. At Lagrange 1 is where they're going to put the first hotel space stations because you would get just as much traffic coming up and going back from the moon as you would the Earth because, you know, that's the next thing. You know, the moon is going to start. It has a lot of advantages. It has, you know, some minerals. You know, they're finding ice in the moon's craters that are shielded at the poles from the sun so it doesn't evaporate off. They may have enormous amounts of ice, which means what? Oxygen and hydrogen, rocket fuel, breathing. And you can build all kinds of stuff with, you got enough energy, sun, and a little bit of matter, you can make all kinds of goodies. You can smelt all kinds of stuff. In fact, there was a book, you know, I'll tell you about this book. You know, we'll spend a lot of time on this book. It's going to tell you the future. It's called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, a science fiction novel by Robert Heinlein. And it's about the moon becomes a penal colony like Australia was to Great Britain. And after a while, I mean, certainly if you're on the moon for any amount of time, you kind of lose your ability to go back to Earth. I mean, your muscles atrophy, you get acclimated to the low gravity and so on. Eventually, I mean, you're there unless you keep training, you know, to keep your muscles and bone mass up. So, you know, centrifugal rooms spin around, give you artificial gravity, something. But so at the end of the story, the bottom line was is that the moon declares its independence from Earth. Well, it's more at the top of the gravity well. It uses mass drivers, which is electromagnetic, you know, train, you know, but it just throws boxcars into space, you know, like a sea container is just, you know, it goes boom, and it shoots it into like a rail gun into space, and they could do that all day. Now, we can bomb Earth all we want. You know, our computer, we just boom, 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 you leave us alone, leave us alone, leave us alone. So that's, you know, the end of the book, the moon declares its independence. Well, what's going to happen? I mean, you look, you know, 100, 200, 300 years in the future, 30. I mean, you know, how long does it take Mars? You know, just to get away from all the crap that's going on now, there are people that are planning to leave. We're going to space and government's not invited because you can't hear the government scream in space. When we come back, I'm going to give you some details on what's happening right now that you don't know. New York Times, telling you all about it. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be the theme music of the space station. American woman, just stay away from me. You know, I always think of whenever Canada's doing stuff, for some reason, if you ever read the lyrics and you hear them, you're going, you know, I can see, you know, just stay away from me. I don't want none of your, you know, wars no more. I mean, it's just for some reason, I don't know why, I always think of Canada when that happened, or something must have happened when I was younger. But it's, you know, it's a good song. You know, I just stay. I don't care how party you are and the kind of Corvette you have and how long your blonde haired legs are. I'm just, you know, I'm good. Well, you know, there's going to be another race. There's going to be another claim. I mean, is space big enough? How big is it? If LaGrange 1 is going to be the place where we want to, a lot of the hotels and so on are going to want to be in that because you're at the top of the hill, go, you know, moon and Earth. How crowded is that going to be? Space is pretty big. But I mean, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have, it's going to be like a city, you know, just sitting out there. All right. Well, let me go ahead and I just want to share this with you. And Pal Gamel just came in. We've been talking about you, pal. You know, there's,
hello, Ernie.
And it's, you know, is the mic on?
I hope so.
And just, what's it turned up to?
Can you hear it? Yeah, you got to push number 2 button, the red button.
Got to push the button, man. The so what we did is we have been covering and following this, and I want to read this to you so you can see what's coming. At the Bigelow Aerospace Factory here, this is in Las Vegas, the full-size space station mock-up sitting on the warehouse floor looks somewhat like puffy white watermelons. The interiors offer a hint of what spacious living in space might look like. What they do is imagine a cylinder that is, I tell you, imagine Chinese handcuffs, okay? You know, you pull them and they're thin. You can expand them. They get bigger. You know, it's something like that. Well, it's a balloon, but it goes in. If you have it collapsed, it only takes up a small diameter. Imagine, you know, a tube that goes in, a cardboard tube that you have wrapping paper in, all right? Well, it goes up in a rocket. It comes. Well, then that comes out of that sleeve and expands. You know, it just blows up like a balloon. Well, you got air pressure in there. Yeah, that's all you care about. I mean, you know, it's not like, what, you need walls? I mean, you know, stair steps or something? I mean, you need an entryway, a foyer? I mean, what do you need? You need space that's got, like, air. That's what you need. And it's not too hot or cold. I mean, that's what you're looking for. So they came out with this, the ability to make these cylinders that link to each other like they were Fisher-Price toys. And you can do them in, you know, a big giant circle. You can do it in a mass. You can do it in like the Android droid ball. You can do whatever you want. This is what's coming. They already have them up there. They've been testing them for a while. Every astronaut that has come in here just says, wow, says Robert T. Bigelow, the company founder. They can't believe the size of this thing. 4 years from now, the company plans for real modules to be launched and assembled into the solar system's first private space station, paying customers, primarily nations that do not have the money or expertise to build a space program from scratch, would arrive a year later. In 2016, a second, larger station would follow. The two Bigelow stations would then be home to 36 people at a time, six times as many as currently live on their International Space Station. If this business plan unfolds as it is written, the company has two fully inflated test modules in orbit already. Bigelow will be buying 15 to 20 rocket launchings in 2017, and in each year after, providing ample business for the private companies that the Obama administration would like to finance for the transportation of astronauts into orbit, the so-called Commercial Crew Initiative. I don't like the grammar in that, but the point that they're making is that Bigelow is going to be taking up 15 to 20 rocket launchings. Well, who's going to provide those rocket launches?
Falcon 9.
Here they come. They can go wherever they want. President Obama's budget proposal for 2011 calls for investing $6 billion over 5 years for probably two or more companies to develop spacecraft capable of carrying people into space. Then, instead of operating its own systems like the space shuttles, NASA would buy rides for its astronauts on these commercial space taxis. And I don't need the government involved. You know, that was the whole point. Spaceship One, Government Zero. It was Powell and I that went, you know, Powell came up with the idea of the sign that said Spaceship One, Government Zero.
And you showed me how to make them.
And we made them in my house that weekend before we went. And when we came up with a bunch of ideas. I mean, we had six different slogans that we had. And I don't know why we didn't think of that one. That was good. Pal goes, I got one for you. And he puts it on. I'm like, oh, that's it. Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah. And Bert Rattan thought so, too. Ran over, grabbed that sign out of my hand and gave it to the astronaut. Stand on top of the space capsule. And it went around the planet. Well, the government can't allow this to go on, or not going to, without having their finger in it. And they're trying to, you know, buy up a lot of the launches and doing, you know, whatever. We'll see where this goes. But 15 to 20 rocket launchings in 2017 to deploy an entire space station that they've already tested for the past 2 years, and they're ready to put it up in service, right, not later. We're going to space. I don't know what you guys are going to be doing down here. Well, at least I'm supporting it. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
You are part of a rebel alliance! And you're and we're going to crush you. Yeah, the tighter your grip, the more star systems that leak out between your fingers. You know, it's the same old, same old, same old, same old. You think they're not going to have their little Darth Vader guy? Oh, here they come. You know, last night I was watching television. I kind of hit across a Family Guy, and it was a two-hour thing for Family Guy, you know, or at least an hour or something like that. I'm like, the heck is this? And I flipped on it, and it was a Star Wars parody thing. You know, Stewie was Darth Vader. Yeah, it was funny. So we're looking at this, and Powell came in. He just came from the sentencing of our friend Jim Keyser that was going on just a little while ago. He's the one that, in a custody battle over years with his wife, he refused to drug his son. And we know him down here. I mean, he came down a lot of times on the weekend because Jim is a carpenter, and he built our video set and our stages and a lot of things, a lot of work that was done here, he did. And he would every other weekend when he had his son, Ben, he'd come down and, you know, and so on. And you could tell the difference. I mean, you know, it's Friday night to Sunday. There was a big difference in just, you know, his demeanor and how bright he was and engaged he was because, you know, the drugs he was on. And I could tell. I'm a father. I mean, I could tell. Now, I don't know all the issues, but Jim, he was very adamant. He's like, look, they're force drugging my kid. They're going to screw him up. You know, he's like 10 years old now, and he goes, they're going to destroy him. There's nothing wrong with him. He's just a boy. Now, active, I want a touchy-feely, give me a button to push and switch to flip. I mean, you know, I have two boys. I know exactly how this is. I got nephews. I mean, they're called boys, okay? But when he's out of the house and so on, sometimes it's just more than, you know, mother, there's obviously something wrong with him. The school says so. You know, he doesn't want to sit there and listen to their crap, you know. So it's just, you know, it just drug him. So he finally decided, no, this is it's father thing. So he took him and he went to Florida. And he was almost ready to, you know, hit the waves. He was working on a sailboat and that. He was going. And so they finally got him at a traffic stop. And it came out who he was and everything. And then he was arrested. And the son came back and reunited with his mother. And he hasn't been able to see him for months. And so finally today, you know, Mark Victor is his attorney on this. And they won't let you bring up the defense. You know, look, I was saving my child. My son was being subjected to, you know, chemical torture. You know, what am I supposed to do? I went through the entire process. And you're saying, nope, got to do it. Nope, got to do it. Nope, you're going to lose your parental rights if you don't yourself make sure you give, when he's with you, drugs to your son. And he was like, I'm not playing. So, you know, it finally comes down. Oh, and by the way, when they do, you took flight with your son, you kidnapped you, whatever, him, you know, child custody thing. There's a crime in there somewhere. And he goes, they're going, oh, you can't even talk about why you did it. Not allowed. Wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. But it became a pretty big deal. Web pages, signs go up, flyers. I mean, this is not a secret. And a lot of people are like, look, yeah, you're not the only one with this problem. So, you know, judges are, they rule the minds of the children. I mean, get used to it. This is what we deal with every day. You know, close, people we know. We see, you look at this, so you cannot look at Ben and not know that it's, you know, oh, well, the state, whose mind is that? At what time, at what age does Ben get the claim? There'll come a time, you know, I mean, if he's not mushed already, was 14, 16, you have to wait till he's 18, not take it, is by then he's already dependent on the drugs or whatever. I mean, everybody, there's a pill for everything instead of, you know, just a standard of living, a vocation, a lifestyle that suits your personality. And I didn't see anything wrong with him. As far as I don't live with him, but it seemed like a normal kid to me. So today was the sentencing. So, pal, tell us what happened.
Ben's a 9-year-old boy, by the way. Jim, apparently they didn't read his rights to him at some point, and apparently there was evidence of this. So the prosecution ultimately gave him a pretty nice plea deal of pleading guilty to custodial interference without violence and without repetition. And the judge, he got a judge who I thought was very lenient, did allow the introduction of the fact that this was all about drugs, not about trying to deprive his mother of...
As what, in the sentencing thing? Or
in the sentencing, not in the trial. And, yeah. And the judge made it absolutely clear that no matter what, it would not affect the sentence itself. So you're absolutely right about that. So the sentence ultimately was 3 years probation, which is what the prosecution had agreed to, stipulated to. And the prosecution, during the hearing, asked for 3 years of wearing a ankle bracelet. He's currently wearing an ankle bracelet now, that throughout the entire 3 years of probation, he'd be continuing to wear that ankle bracelet. The difference is he'd be paying $100 a month for that ankle bracelet for that 3 years, which he's already, you know.
In addition to child support.
And child support, which is, you know, he's been making that, but he's just barely been making those payments. So, you know, that would just be a killer for him. But at any rate, after some arguments from Mark Victor, et cetera, and some witnesses for Jim, the judge ultimately said 3 months continue to wear the ankle bracelet. Now, the ankle bracelet's there to basically say you cannot come within 300 yards of your son Ben. So somehow they have a radio device at Ben's house, residence, that, you know, and Jim has not violated that in the intervening time. It's been, I think, 18 months or so since he was arrested out in Florida.
No, it can't have been that long.
Really, it's been less than that.
Yeah, because, you know, he built the studio here.
So
he went last summer, so it was probably It's probably, I think he came back this summer. You know, it was like August or something.
Been a
like
year
that.
Then.
Yeah, so maybe.
So he hasn't violated the terms of the court, and the court recognized that. So ultimately, I think he got the best deal he could have possibly hoped for. You know, they weren't about to drop charges, so.
Yeah, and, no, he was gone with his son for months.
No, he still has problems. He's got family court, which if anybody out there knows about family court, that's a friggin' nightmare, and he's still got to placate them and their things. And he's also got some other court that's doing something with him for the same event. But, it's you know, you just sit there and go, wow, man, they just hit you and hit you and hit you.
And he's nine, so that's another, you know, 9 years, you know, before he's of age to take on himself, you know. And this is, you know, marry well. This is good advice.
Well, Jim, I don't think ever really had a serious relationship. Obviously, he had a serious enough relationship with the mother, but I think basically it was one of the things where he had sex with her and knocked her up at some point. I don't know how serious the relationship was, but Jim stepped forward and said, you know, I want to be, you know, sharing the parenting of this child. And he's, you know, been that way since Ben's 9 years.
All the more reason to say marry well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. It's, you know, well, that's what you hope for your son.
Well, was she or anyone on her side of the family at the sentencing?
Oh, yeah. She did a good job of, you know, of sticking, you know, whatever she could stick into him that she could, and that's fine. She's very good at it. And you know, she has her side, and she's upset and ticked off that he ran off with her son. And you can't hardly blame her for that. So,
well, did she defend the drug use?
No, she brought it up to basically say, actually, kind of what you said. She referred to the fact that he's been saying he's been going on websites and other things, basically publicly denouncing this treatment that's been court approved and blah 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 blah, government approved. And you're like going, oh, God, okay, whatever.
That's her argument.
But of course, you know, that's a government judge you're talking in front of. So that's, you know, probably goes over big with him. So.
So he's right now, he's done, finished. Mark Victor is dismissed from, he's finished, done.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so now it's three more months of his ankle bracelet.
Three more months, he has to go back for a hearing to see if it continued for another 3 months, and I got a feeling they won't, particularly if he's already working out of state by then.
Yeah, he doesn't like that ankle bracelet.
I don't blame him. I mean, it's a tether, even though his tether is far less onerous than others. I mean, his is only you have to stay within 300 yards away. There's others that you can't leave the city without permission. You can't leave the state without, you know.
Well, his biggest thing is that thing won't hold a charge. And he likes to go swimming. And it's just an annoyance to him. He's got to be back at night, you know, and he can't go to any of the parties. And he's just really irritated by the whole
thing.
It'd
be a serious annoyance if it started costing him $100 a month. Which,
yeah. Well, so now is anything about the custody come up? Is he ever going to get to see his son again?
I have no idea, but I imagine the judge even basically said, you know, it's going to be years before you see your kid again. And so I think the judge is, and the judge has nothing to do with that. That's family court. So, but I think the judge basically is acknowledging he knows what this kind of case is. It's like, you know, you're never going to be, you know, before you finally get supervised, you know, visitation.
Wow. Wow. You know, the thing is, though, is that he and Ben worked well together. I mean, you know, Ben loves his dad. You know, he loves his dad. There's no doubt about that. And when they were caught and he was like, I'm good, man. I don't want to be on the drugs. That's why I'm here.
Once Ben hits, you know, 14 or 15, he'll probably have much bigger say in, you know, when and where he can see his dad.
Yeah, you just wonder, when you go through the puberty years,
five
it really messes
years
you up.
On Ritalin, man. And not only that, it screws up your height, your growth. You know, it shortened.
Yeah, that
stature.
Was a big thing, too. They found out that he was, they were gone 3 or 4
yeah,
months.
He was gone like six inches under his height when he was taken, and I guess he put it all on.
Yeah, so when he comes back, the mother hardly recognized him. All of a sudden, he spurted up without that. And, you know, you can't see this stuff and not notice. I mean, you know,
it's sad, and we shouldn't, you know, the mother, there's no dispute over how good of a mother she is. So, you know, and there's no dispute over how good of a father Jim is either in this. That's not the problem. It's a problem of medication and whether or not Jim had the right, the authority, the constitutional, you know, parent, whatever, to keep his kid off drugs or not. So
you know what it reminds me of? There was a movie called Equilibrium. Did you ever see that?
I don't think so.
It was probably I don't know, maybe this decade, but it was all about in a future. It was kind of like THX 1138, you know, George Lucas's, you know, future movie with Robert Duvall back in the day, back in, that was in the early 70s or
Crime not to take your drugs?
Exactly. And it was, you know, they were like, hey, you know, you're too emotional. You know, the problem with the humans is we're emotional. We make all these, you know, you strip emotion away, then you can just be good little doobies and you're all set. So that's what they did, and they banned art and all kinds of stuff, any expressions of emotion. And so Equilibrium was all about, you know, taking your drugs. And you got the little kids narking on the parents. You know, it's like a DARE program in reverse, going, hey, man, I don't think my dad's taking his drugs. So this is where we're going on this stuff. So we followed this, and the reason that we followed this is because we knew Jim and Ben. You know, I haven't met the mother or anything like that. I just knew a couple of things. One, seemed like a normal kid to me. Two, he was definitely different on Friday than he was Sunday. Okay. And I didn't, I mean, he was more touchy-feely, 9-year-old, where's the power tools kind of guy, you know, on Sunday, but what the hell else did you expect? You know, so we got along fine. He listened to him, he's a well-behaved kid, he's a good-looking kid, and I'm just, him being without a father that really loves him like that, I, you know, that's the crime. So I'm glad that we followed this and to the end, and hopefully, you know, when that ankle thing comes off, I know what Jim's going to do, man. It's going to be party. Go do something. We'll have something fun to do. That sucks. He's not going to get to see his son, though. But I wanted to get back on, you know, the space thing, because, you know, it's not often that we have Pal in. You've been following this pretty closely. Tell me about the Falcon Project.
Well, the Falcon Project was Elon Musk, who also used his millions, PayPal millions.
Billions?
Yeah, it probably is close to at least $1 billion, because he put in $100 million into the Falcon 1 initially, just without batting an eye. And that was the prototype or the singles. It's a dual stage, but it lifts very – it goes into low orbit with a fairly small payload. But it was basically a test bed for the Falcon 9, which is a major rocket. And the beauty of that first stage is you can take that 9-engine first stage and put 3 of them together, and they actually have a cartoon diagram, but they don't refer to it, but you can see it on their website. They have one where they have 5 of those first stages linked together. So, I mean, that's 45 engines, man. That is some heavy lifting on whatever you're going to stick on top of that second stage.
Oh, wow.
Just like going. And those things basically have to use up their fuel in the first 50 miles. So basically it's just getting it off the ground and putting it up 50 miles, and then you separate that second stage and take it the rest of the way. And essentially you're looking at, you know, those 3 and 5 ones are essentially leaving Earth orbit. There's no doubt about it. Those babies are set up to either go to the moon, go to some serious asteroids, or Mars. I'm just like going, wow, we can, you know, and they do it. I'm on your show. I think I might have misquoted the price. I looked it up afterwards. It's $50 million for this Falcon 9. But as you pointed out, that's 1/10 the cost of the space shuttle launch.
I'm looking at here, let me show you. I'm looking at that picture. That's the 3 one, you know. Here, they push the button.
Absolutely.
And they're, you know, so that's, they're just keep clustering them. You duct tape them together enough of them. You can do whatever you want.
You just bolt them on the sides. And you just sit there and go, wow, that is so cool.
Well, did they talk about, I mean, they talk about Mars. You know, but, you know, this is going to be an interesting thing. I mean, you have an entire planet. Sooner or later, humanity is going to be on Mars. That's just, you know, first it's 1, then it's 2, then it's, you know, 1 million. I mean, whatever. It's going to be, you know, we can go over here and get away from y'all. We're all good. The only thing they got to worry about is probably the company that deals their mining or something. And I'm wondering what kind of government we're going to take with us. You know, it's and you're going to be somebody with their ion pulse cannon saying, "No, we rule you too from Earth," and they're going, "No, you don't."
NASA. The whole purpose of NASA is to make sure only government is going up into space. We're all left behind. We get promised, "Oh, yeah, it'll be," and they show you all the little cartoons, etc. But it's always the government that ends up going up into the military that goes into.
Well, they talk about how big a payloads, what they're planning on doing with a 45 engine configuration.
No, but I mean, essentially, you ought to be able to multiply the weight, the maximum weight for leaving orbit or geosynchronous orbit by five and get a pretty good idea what the payload could be.
You know, one thing that I've always looked forward to is there's other ways to get out of the atmosphere, like Spaceship Two. They don't even start the rocket engines until they're 70,000 feet up. Saves a lot of energy.
You can do that with balloons.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Your smile speaks books to me. What, you don't like that song? I like that song.
I thought we were going to get to sing that song. You know, the final one,
we're
all...
No, oh, you wanted the Constant Sorrow song.
Yeah, well.
Okay. We bring in Topher here. He's got to learn to sing. You know, the one... it's interesting that, you know, just in the couple days that you're spending here helping doing your work, and, you know, some of this stuff, I'll bet... Even all you sci-fi loving Star Trek watching individual youngins in college, you had no freaking idea there were private space stations in orbit, did you?
I didn't know about the space stations. I knew there were private flights up into space, but I didn't know there were stations.
And they're getting ready to go. We're going to be doing. And what's the link between PAL on Falcon 9, SpaceX, Bigelow Aerospace, Spaceship Two? Richard Branson, Rocket Racing League. I mean, all these guys, I'm sure they know of each other. I mean, you know, how are they? They got a little secret spaceman Rocket Ranger club or something?
I don't know about that. Spaceship 2 handles its own launching capability, so they probably, I'm sure they're interested. Bert Rutan has always talked about building a space station up there of its own that you could sit up there and float in a globe.
In a bubble,
and you know, watch the Earth and the stars above, which I imagine would be a moving thing. So
that's his big thing, man.
There's no doubt he looks at this as the potential for that a Falcon 9 program for the potential of that. And there's absolutely no doubt Bigelow Aerospace is absolutely thrilled that Falcon 9's off the ground because now they have their launch platform, and it's a pretty decent priced launch platform, too.
Well, they've been using former Soviet, Russian rockets.
That are only capable of carrying half as much as the Falcon 9 does.
Really?
So they can carry twice the load, and I don't know I think it's the same price that the Soyuz were being priced at.
Well, this is, I mean, they're talking about, you know, what is it? How many they say here? 15 to 20 rocket launchings that they're buying.
Yeah, why not?
That's a big chunk of something.
It's called commercial. Well, Elon Musk has already announced that he's doubling his staff. There are like 1,000 of them now. He's going to 1,800 by the end of this year, basically to start mostly producing Falcon 9 rockets. So, I mean, it's just like boom, 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 boom.
Let me ask Topher. Here, you're 20 years old, right?
Yep.
When I was 20, man, I figured by my age right now, I'd already be the Jetsons. You know, government got my freaking way, okay? Government kept my Jetson lifestyle away from me. They're sitting there, and my kids, my grandkids, they're indebting their generation to build more, I don't know, car, infrastructure, highway, freeway. You're stuck, man. You're down here, and get used to it. And I'm going... You know, this three-dimensional space that's all around us. Like, you know, can I just, you know, go live in the lone prairie in my rocket car 90 minutes New York to Paris kind of thing? So I'm looking at your age. You're looking at this and you're going, okay, we're going to go to space. What does that mean to you? I mean, is it someplace you want to go? Is it cool that it's there? Is there technology benefits from it? Or we can leave and government's not invited? I mean, what are you thinking?
That latter is exactly what I'm thinking. For a while, I've been real excited about getting my own private spacecraft and just chilling, just like, you know, Yao Ming in the 18th century. They went west because there was no government there, and I want to go to space because there's no government there. So, you know, I'd love to live up there.
It's Serenity. I want my Firefly transport module. You know, that's what's going to happen. You know, we're going to get our some way that we can make money in space. The risk is going to be, you know, less than going in a Yankee cutter across the ocean kind of. I mean, you know, it's amazing the risk for the possibility of fortune that people did in exploration of this planet. Do you think that same kind of human trait has been beaten out of us. Oh, they've tried, but it's not gone. It never will be. We're going to space. The final frontier, brought to you by Free Enterprise. Here we go. We'll talk to you tomorrow.